My name's Joanna Williams. I'm the founder and director of the think tank EO, and I'm the author of a new book, How Woke Won, published with Spiked and John Wilkes Publishers.
Joanna, thank you for talking to the History Reclaimed podcast series again. Your new book, we always like to know, why are you writing it now? Woke has won. It's being challenged, but it's fairly well established in society. Are you facing a losing battle?
I think that's a very good question. The reason why I wrote the book is because the previous two books I wrote were on the subject of academic freedom and free speech more broadly, and feminism, women versus feminism. And through my interest in free speech and the impact of contemporary feminism, I also got interested in looking at issues around gender identity and transgender ideology and critical race theory. And I became aware of a huge overlap between people who kind of assume that gender is a social construct or an identity that you choose, and people who also buy into thinking around critical race theory, and just how these views have really come to dominate the establishment thinking in a lot of our leading institutions, the media, publishing, even the law and policing, academia being perhaps the number one of all of these institutions. And I wanted to challenge it not just at the level of particular issues or particular institutions, but actually, I guess, a very ambitious aim of taking on the whole damn thing. And as you said, I think there is some sense that woke has won, but I certainly don't give up all hope of it being challenged. And I think there are some very important areas that we've seen even just recently where challenges have occurred. And ultimately, I think the more light we shine on these issues, the easier it becomes to push back and challenge the dominant thinking.
Now, words such as cervix, statues, employment rights, particularly in universities, and as you say, free speech, feature a lot in your book, How Woke Won. Just give us examples of those, will you? I know the famous one is J.K. Rowling and the statues as well that celebrate so-called slave traders. Does that excite you, Joanna?
It certainly interests me because I want to know why. Why do people hold these ideas? I think it's really important to always ask that. Why have these ideas taken hold? But also, how can they be challenged? Why have these ideas become so dominant? And I guess what excites me, if you like, is when anything seems to take on the status of an orthodoxy, whenever something seems to be put beyond the realms of challenge or challenging it becomes taboo, then I'm very keen to, I guess, poke the hornet's nest and ask, why can't we challenge this? Why can't we say this? And why has this become an orthodoxy that we're just supposed to accept without questioning? And I think certainly some attitudes towards the past, attitudes towards free speech, certainly attitudes towards, I guess in the past were being encapsulated in our views towards gender, the views we're supposed to hold towards nation and national identity, for example, really do seem to have taken on that status of a certain orthodoxy, a certain view that right-thinking people hold, for example. I mean, I guess Brexit would be another good example. Certainly within universities, there was a very dominant narrative, and obviously you were allowed to question that narrative. You could say something different, but you'd find yourself pretty quickly as an outcast if you were a Brexit-supporting academic. There was an orthodoxy, and the orthodoxy was pro-Remain. And if you challenged that, then you were in a minority and you stood out. And I guess what concerns me is sometimes we move away quite quickly from formal censorship, from edicts and instructions about what we can and can't say, and from legal constraints on what we're allowed to say. But the informal censorship, the moral prohibition on saying certain things or expressing ideas can become even more powerful than formal legal acts of censorship. And I guess what really interests me is where does this conformist thinking, if you like, where do these dominant ideas, where do they come from, and how do they take such a hold in society that challenging them can carry such a huge social cost for people who do that?
Indeed, you turn the arguments of equality on their head, because instead of saying that woke represents a progression in society towards more equality, whatever your race or class, you're saying it's a theory that's propounded by cultural elites and that it weaponizes victimhood. Can you explain that?
Yes, certainly. I think this operates on a number of different levels. I mean, on the one hand, you can see it operates perhaps most straightforwardly linguistically. There's a certain club, if you like, of people who know the latest woke vocabulary to use, and they exclude people who are not up to date with that vocabulary. So in the realm of gender, for example, it's become very fashionable now to talk about even babies, not as being boys or girls, but assigned male at birth or assigned female at birth. And this assigned at birth has become a particular phrase that it gives the game away, if you like. It signals to other people that you are in the know, that you're part of this woke group, that you know that sex is assigned at birth randomly by doctors and that gender identity is the most important thing about a person. Or if you look at it in terms of race, for example, it wasn't that long ago, perhaps maybe even just 5-6 years ago, that the acronym BME was very widely used, Black and Minority Ethnic People, and this was supposed to be the very latest in kind of politically correct thinking. And then I think it was about maybe 4 years ago that it was pointed out that actually A for Asian needed to be included in there, and it was wrong in a British context not to have DA for Asian in there. So then we got BAME or BAME, references to BAME people. And now that's not supposed to be correct, because we're told that this is a very all-encompassing label for a very disparate group of people, which incidentally I actually agree with wholeheartedly. I completely agree with that criticism and would make that criticism of the expression BAME myself. But the fact I'm making is that there's a very fast-changing vocabulary, and each time the language changes, some people drop out along the way, some people don't keep up, and the purpose of this language, this vocabulary shifting, the changes in vocabulary serve, is that it demarcates an elite group of people who can afford the luxury, if you like, of knowing, keeping up to date, knowing what the correct views to hold are at any one time, and are able to form essentially a clique of the right-minded, the right-thinking, which serves to exclude essentially non-graduates, mainly, who don't have the latest training in the right vocabulary to use. But I guess it becomes a very elite ideology as well, just in the sense that this is the dominant view, which is held by the people who run all our leading institutions, I would say particularly academia, publishing, the media, even many businesses. You look certainly at Netflix, all those kind of creative industries, museums, art galleries, have very much been taken over, I think, by a group of people in society who have a lot in common, actually often know each other, I mean literally know each other, but share this common outlook and this common way of understanding the world. And I think for them, it really is just common sense. They think that all people, all right-minded people or decent people should see the world through the same prism, the same lens with which they see the world. And if you don't see the world that way, then rather than trying to understand why you might think differently, you're often just written off as an outsider and kind of beyond redemption. And I think that makes it very difficult for people who are outside this elite, if you like, to really make their mark in any of the creative industries in particular nowadays, but also just industry more broadly. I think if you look at kind of multinational ice cream companies like Ben & Jerry's or Coca-Cola or Nike, that they've all taken on board at the top of the institution, this need to express woke views.
But you say it doesn't represent the working class, and you referred to it there, but isn't it good that I don't use some of the racial slurs that were bandied about in the 60s? Isn't political correctness a progression, and woke is an extreme form of political correctness, but it does lead to us all respecting one another more, doesn't it?
Well, I think certainly society has evolved and progressed, and I think that's wholeheartedly, you know, without doubt, a good thing. I think whatever statistical measure you care to use, whether you're looking at gender equality or racial equality, society has progressed hugely in all areas, and I think that's absolutely something to be celebrated. I think it's something I personally wish we celebrated it a lot more than we did. We seem to berate ourselves for every statistical inequality rather than ever really taking stock and celebrating the huge progress that we've made as a society. And it seems to me that as part of that huge progress towards equality that we've made, there will of course come about changes in language, changes in representation, just changes in attitudes and opinions and fashions. You look at some of the television programs, some of the sitcoms, for example, that I used to watch when I was a child, and frankly, you just cringe nowadays. And I couldn't ever imagine showing those programs to my daughter and her finding them remotely funny, because they just grate against the common sensibility that we have nowadays. And I think that's a good thing. I certainly wouldn't want to turn the clock back on any of that progress at all. But to me, I think that's very, very different to this kind of organic change and naturally occurring change, which has come about as a result of more foundational changes within society. It's very, very different to a kind of artificial imposition of change as a kind of top-down mechanism. So, for example, instruction courses that people go on in the workplace, or mandatory diversity training programs that students are expected to do before they even start a course. Trying to change culture from the top down is to me, that's a kind of woke project that represents something very different to the organic linguistic changes and changes of etiquette that occur through the process of society just having changed over the course of several decades.
But is woke really a political philosophy? I know that you might say, papers such as the Daily Mail like to refer to Labour terminology as woke, and it's something that Boris Johnson and Conservative politicians refer to as well. They use it as a taunt against equality campaigners and against Labour. But you surprisingly say that the Conservatives really aren't standing up for free speech and aren't tackling the woke agenda enough. But doesn't that all detract from the cost of living, from energy price rises, and all the mainstream political arguments that really make a difference to people's lives?
Yes, to some extent, I absolutely think that's true. But just to unpick, there's a couple of questions in there, both of them kind of really interesting and very much worth exploring in their own terms. So the first one about whether woke actually is a philosophy or is a political ideology, I think is a very important point to explore. And I think, in some ways, at risk of contradicting what I've said earlier, it's not. And I think that is an important thing to acknowledge, because what I mean by that is there are very few philosophers or political theorists who do self-identify, to use the woke expression, as woke themselves. In the past, philosophers or theorists would very consciously and deliberately want to align with Marxism, for example, or with existentialism, or with a particular school of thought, whereas most people who are actually very woke deny that they are woke. And I think that is an important point to recognise. Perhaps later on, we can dig into the reasons why that might be the case. But that means that there aren't kind of committees of woke people getting together, kind of sending out decrees as to what the latest woke thought is. And that makes it, again, it is a very interesting thing in terms of writing the book. It makes it a very challenging set of ideas to take up, because it's a very nebulous and very loosely held and also very fluid, changing, very, very rapidly changing set of ideas, which I don't think makes it less important, and I don't think makes it less of a significant issue for us to take up. But I do think it makes it not necessarily a kind of coherent ideology, as we might have understood that phrase in the past. But then more specifically in relation to the second part of your question, in relation to the Conservative Party, I think the Conservative Party are incredibly confused about woke. I think, and I wouldn't trust them as far as I could throw them to actually challenge woke in any way, shape or form. I think it's kind of one step forward, two steps backwards. I think in part they have an instinctive sense that some of their voters, perhaps in particular Red Wall constituents, don't buy into this agenda, and that it's not hugely popular with the electorate, and that coming out and making noises every so often against, children being prescribed hormones to change gender or to pause puberty might be a bit of a vote winner if they can come out and make some loud statements like that. Might give them a bit of short-term popularity. But as you mentioned earlier, they, at the very, very same time as coming out and making statements like that, can introduce things like an online safety bill, which actually really is very detrimental, I think, for free speech. So there's all kinds of very, very contradictory things going on. And I think there are probably some people high up in the Conservative Party who look at woke thinking. And again, another thing perhaps to come on and pick up on later on is I think there are huge generational differences emerging. And I think some in the Conservative Party think, well, if we want to win the votes of younger generations in particular, we can't possibly challenge woke thinking. If we want to win young people over, the only thing we can possibly do is become woke ourselves and to kind of make woke statements to appeal to this section of the electorate. So yeah, I think the whole thing is very nebulous and very confusing.
Well, as we conclude this podcast, Joanna, and thank you very much indeed for talking to the History Reclaim podcast series, but you do say wokers won. You say it's an elitist movement that threatens democracy, tolerance and reason. Some might say that's a harsh view and ask for your evidence base, but how do you see the future playing out? And will things like the war in Ukraine lead to an examination of woke in any way?
Well, I would like to say I hope so, but in some ways, obviously, it's far more important, and it kind of trivialises. I would worry about trivialising a little bit what's going on in Ukraine to say that it has such lessons for us in the West. But I think certainly when the conflict first broke out, there were a lot of people saying, it seemed, or certainly a reasonable number of people saying, well, perhaps this will really make us take stock of where we are, and politics has got serious again, and global conflict back, and we almost as if there could potentially be a reinvention of the Cold War, and suddenly it's time for adults to reclaim their seat at the table.
That is it, isn't it? That, woke is seen that not serious politics, and war is serious politics. You've got that.
Yes, absolutely. But I think that lasted for about 3 days, it seemed to me. If you look at what's been dominating the news headlines for the past few days, did Keir Starmer take a few sips of beer at an event in Durham? Did Angela Rayner show her legs off to distract from the Prime Minister? Is this sexist? Is this not sexist? And then all the same stories about woke have kind of slowly, the kind of cultural conflicts that we've had have slowly rumbled on in the background. And I think that's because, again, I guess this is where my thesis of, that woke has won, but not forever. I've got to add in as my conclusion, you know, I don't think it's a permanent state of affairs. I think that there's possibility for change. But the fact that this kind of woke mindset has taken over so many of our public institutions means that no matter how much we might want to get serious or how much people might think, well, come on, now is the time for the adults to reclaim a seat at the table, it's very difficult for that shift to occur because we've come so far down this path now. When the war in Ukraine first broke, there was a kind of series of memes demonstrated on Twitter which were comparing or looking at kind of army recruitment campaigns in, I think it was particularly one that had been doing the rounds in the US, but there were similar campaigns doing the rounds in the UK, and the whole emphasis was on diversity and gender identity and how the army was a really good place to be if you wanted to express your gender identity, how the army would be very welcoming and very tolerant of you no matter what your gender expression was. And you just compare that to the reality that we're seeing on our television screens every day now of bombed out buildings and the true horror of war, and the idea that you can kind of face paint a butterfly on your face and the army will be very accepting of you suddenly seems very silly in comparison. But I do wonder however much people might have a hope that this would bring about change, I'm quite despairing that it can't and it won't. It instead, I think, serves as a salutary lesson for us that we really need to actually take the culture war in some ways more seriously than before, not seeing it as a distraction. It actually is, it seems to me, where we really do need to push back and challenge in recognition of actually how serious things are on the world stage. It becomes even more important that we challenge these culture warriors at home.
And you say, just finally, Joanna, that we're looking at an elite that's lost its moral authority, that woke has won, but at the heart of those arguments are the need for and a plea, a heartfelt plea by you for free speech.
Yes, definitely. I think that's the bedrock of everything, really, because to me, free speech is so important because I link it fundamentally to democracy. I think we can't really have proper democratic debate and proper democratic engagement with the majority of the population without having free speech. And for me, what ultimately poses the biggest threat to woke thinking is democracy. Whenever we shine a light on woke thinking and whenever we actually it actually gets put to the people, we find that the people reject it. And some of the most notable examples of that, interestingly enough, have actually been in relation to historical monuments and statues. And when town councils, for example, or a small section of people within a particular place have tried to change the name of a street or have a statue taken down, and the local council, for whatever reason, has said, no, we need to, well, we can consider your argument, but we need to put this to a public vote. You know, most often the public decide, no, we want to keep it. And that's not from a position of ignorance. That's saying, you know, we recognise the past, we know what's gone on, but we also recognise that this has a different significance and a different context in today's climate. And we do democratically want to keep what's been there already. And I think that really points the way forward in how we need to challenge woke. We need to have free speech to involve more and more people in our democratic institutions and put far more issues to the public and let people really have their say rather than it just being the protected realm of a small elite.
Joanna Williams, thank you for talking to the History Reclaimed podcast series today about your new book, How Woke Won. Let's hope you're not no-platformed.
Thank you very much indeed. It's a real pleasure to speak to you.